Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. COVID-19 is claiming the lives of factory workers on the Mexican border. Several employees have died at a Lear Corporation manufacturing plant in Ciudad Juarez. Others are sick. KTEP's Angela Cocherga has one family's story.
Raul Rosales worked as a quality control supervisor in Ciudad Juarez at a Lear Corporation factory. The company makes automotive seating and electrical systems. His daughter, Monica Rosales, said he spent the last couple of weeks fighting for his life after testing positive for COVID-19.
He's not breathing by himself. He's with a ventilator.
On April 11th, Raul Rosales' family had him transported by ambulance from a medical facility in Juarez to a hospital on the Texas side of the border. He's a legal U.S. permanent resident, and his family lives in El Paso. Monica said her mother and 57-year-old father had exchanged messages saying goodbye as Rosales' condition worsened in Juarez. Monica texted her father emoji hearts and a photo of his grandson.
My baby, he's 14 months old and he loves him. He always laughs with him.
Rosales says her father told her other Lear managers were in the same Juarez hospital. He also texted that he believed the actual number of COVID-19 deaths at his manufacturing plant was much higher than the Mexican government was revealing.
El gobierno estaba mintiendo y que solamente en su trabajo ya.
We asked Lear about that, and the company declined to provide an exact number of employees who have died. In an emailed statement, Lear said, quote, "We are saddened that several employees at our Juarez City operations who were receiving medical treatment for presumed cases of COVID-19 have passed away due to complications of respiratory illness," end quote. In the same statement, Lear said the company is working to provide the necessary support, including grief counseling and medical care, to the employees' families and coworkers.
El número de personas fallecidas, empleados de maquiladora.
Bueno, Chihuahua State Health Authorities, during an online press conference Sunday, said they've confirmed 9 deaths of workers at maquiladoras or factories in Juarez and are waiting for medical records for another 4 patients. That would bring the total to 13. It's not clear if all the Lear employees are included in that tally, since the count is of those who've been tested for the virus.
Lo más probable es que sea COVID.
Dr. Arturo Valenzuela, Chihuahua State Health Authority in Juarez, acknowledged that many current cases of pneumonia or severe respiratory illness are probably COVID-19.
Our workers are probably in a death train.
Traveling on a death train is how labor rights activist and attorney Susana Prieto describes the situation for Mexican factory workers. She said those who've lost loved ones on the job because of COVID-19 should demand their companies take responsibility. Raul Rosales' family could not help but think about his years of loyal service to Lear as they anxiously waited for news from the hospital. His daughter said Rosales, like so many in Juarez, was a proud Lear employee. In December, at his wife's 50th birthday dinner, he wore a shirt with the company logo.
He did a lot. He did a lot for Lear Corporation.
Monica announced to family and friends that her father, Raul Rosales, died Tuesday. She posted on social media, "He became an angel this morning." In El Paso, I'm Angela Cocherga.
Flour or corn? That's a debate that can lead to a heated discussion. But it all started with the corn tortilla, dating back to pre-Columbian times and what we now know as Mexico in Central America. A complex nixtamalization process often involves soaking corn kernels in an alkaline solution and grinding it with a volcanic stone wheel in a mill, a molino, into a masa. It's a process that dates back to the 13th or 14th century. Today, we can grab those tortillas off a grocery store shelf, or if we make them ourselves, we can use maseca flour, add a little water and salt. One woman took the traditional nixtamalization process from her little town near Mexico City to the international hub that is the Netherlands, which up until a few years ago was mostly a taco-free zone. Carla Blancarte Solorzano is the owner of Tortilleria Tayari. The business was started with her former partner, Kelly Van Harten. They met in Mexico and decided to open a business in Kelly's home country of the Netherlands. They opened a tortilleria, a tortilla factory, in the Benelux, the economic intersection of Belgium, the Netherlands, and Luxembourg. The company eventually broke off romantically and professionally. Blancarte is now the sole owner of the tortilleria, the only one in the Netherlands making authentic corn tortillas. The Tortilleria Tayari is one of many businesses around the world struggling to keep its head above water during the pandemic. Carla Blancarte joins us on Fronteras to walk us through the early days of her business.
And the idea was a taqueria. But here there were no tacos 6 years ago, I can tell you. There was no really authentic Mexican food as it is coming up now. The idea was to do tacos, but I was looking for all the ingredients that you need to make a taco. And I thought, okay, all the fillings we can make or we can improvise, but we really need like the tortillas. And looking around, there was only one person making tortillas in Vienna, in Austria. So back in Mexico, talking with my mom, which was always supportive of, you have to put your own business. She said to me, I have an idea why we don't start making tortillas. And if that goes good, then we can put the taqueria. And she said that was a good idea because it was also probably easier. That's what we thought, just to make one product in the beginning. And I've eaten tortillas since I was born, you know. So how difficult it can be to make tortillas, okay. And then she said, okay, you know what, I can help you financially to start the business if you really want it. So she helped me out, and that's how it started.
So was making tortillas a tradition in your family, or was it something you actually had to learn how to make from scratch?
No, I had to learn it from scratch. But we were thinking how to make the tortillas, and that's really something I got from my mom. And my mom said, you have to make them like the traditional process. Don't use any flour. That's not authentic. And the little town where I come from in Mexico City, everywhere they still do nixtamal. They still do tortillas from scratch. So we were always used to eat them that way.
Most people, when they're making tortillas, they usually get maseca, they get a little flour, they get some salt, some water, they put in a comal, and they have a tortilla. But you're going about it in a more traditional, hands-on, difficult manner, a manner that goes back thousands of years.
Yeah, so that's the nixtamalization process. Nowadays, you can buy the flour, like you said, add water. And the traditional process is from the kernels that you have to cook them with lime solution and then grind them. And then you get fresh masa, which is the dough. And then from there, you put it in the oven to get like traditional tortillas.
Now, corn is very essential to Mexican culture and Mexican history. But is that where you source your corn in the Netherlands, or do you import it from elsewhere, like from Mexico?
Well, recently, a year ago, we started importing from Mexico, but also I import corn from America, from Chicago, Illinois. We only use organic corn, by the way. And I did not have any context in Mexico for corn, and I was not really sure where to go, or it was a little bit difficult to find them. But fortunately, there is a really big movement also in Mexico trying to save all our seeds, especially the corn, all our types of native corn. Well, we found tamoa in Mexico, And now we import heirloom corn from them too.
So explain how your business got off the ground. You started making corn tortillas. I'm assuming there's not much of a market for that in the Netherlands. So tell us how you were able to introduce your business into the region once you showed up on the block.
Well, it was pretty funny. I think it was really the perfect timing because you're right. When we started, like I said before, when I was looking for tortillas, there were not many people making tacos or cooking Mexican food. But when we started, actually, we started selling in the Netherlands and Belgium. But in Belgium, there was going to be a competition, like a program on television. It was a competition about restaurants. So there were seven teams, and one of the teams decided they wanted to do Mexican food, specifically tacos. And then one of our clients at the time, he said, you should go to them and tell them that you have the tortillas, because not many people knew about the difference between taco shell and a tortilla, soft tortilla from Mexico, but he knew. So we went there and they said, yeah, we want it. But the people managing the program, they were, of course, well-known chefs in Belgium. And also one of the caterers was the caterer for a really big festival called Tomorrowland. I don't know if you know it.
No.
Techno festival really is like the biggest in the world. It's pretty famous. So it's all about music and food. And from there, I think, is where we start being known in the industry. A lot of people start doing tacos in Belgium. And I was wondering why in Amsterdam there's nothing, because everything happens in Amsterdam. You can find every type of food. It is really international. And I was wondering, why is this happening? Why is nobody selling tacos? What's happening? And 6 months later, that was the summer of 2016. And I can tell you, winter 2016, 2017, everybody started asking about the tacos. And by the summer 2017, every food truck for every festival and restaurants in Amsterdam, they wanted to have a taco in their menu. That's how it all started. And from there, we haven't stopped. It's just growing and growing until now that we're having a little bit of a crisis. But I think when we are over this crisis, it's gonna be busy.
Carla Plancarte Solorzano is the owner of Tortilleria Tayari in the Netherlands. It's one of many businesses impacted globally by the COVID-19 pandemic. When we come back, Plancarte explains how she's keeping her business alive.
So I start making some marketing about it in my social media, and I got super positive response from all the people.
That's next on Fronteras. Stay with us. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The coronavirus has devastated the food industry. Some restaurants and retailers will never do business again. Others struggle to stay alive by offering takeout or selling what they have in their warehouses as groceries to consumers. Tortilleria Tayari was one of those booming businesses before COVID-19. Its owner is the only Mexican tortillera in the Netherlands, Carla Plancarte Solorzano. Plancarte provided authentic corn tortillas to restaurants in the Benelux, the economic union that's bordered by Belgium, the Netherlands, and Luxembourg. Plancarte tells us the tortilleria was booming until the government essentially shut down bars and restaurants in March.
The first 2 years, we were growing really exponentially. So from all the people that sell tacos in the Netherlands, we provide 80% of the restaurants, I can say. So it was going really, really good. And we had more and more people and more exposure, because a lot of high-end restaurants were using our tortillas. So these chefs, they were using our tacos. They were posting a lot on social media. And I think from there, all the people started knowing us better. And then 16th of March, they had to close. So per week, we had like two or three new restaurants coming to ask for the tortillas. And I was a little bit careful of going to the consumer market, because for me, it's a little bit difficult, the logistics with the tortillas. And I was so busy with the restaurants already. I think we had over 100 restaurants at that point when we stopped in the Benelux. So Belgium, the Netherlands, we have France, and we have one restaurant in Ibiza that was going to open now in the high season, the summer. So yeah, it was really, really, really busy.
So how have you changed business practices? You were talking right now about maybe changing to the consumer market. So are you now targeting people individually instead of restaurants, or are you still marketing to restaurants who might be asking you to provide tortillas for their takeout business, perhaps?
Well, for the consumer market, I thought about it because, of course, I didn't have any more orders from the restaurants, and I sell to restaurants 90% and maybe 10% to consumers. But this week, especially today, I had many clients asking if I was still producing because they wanted to do takeaway. But it took them like 3 to 4 weeks to start doing takeaway, actually. I'm happy they are trying something also. And talking to one of the chefs, he said, not only for us, but I know a lot of suppliers depend on us, you know? So we have to help each other. And for the consumer market, it was only because I did not have orders, and I thought maybe I took too long to start selling to that market specifically. And when the lockdown happened, I wanted to sell my stock. So I start making some marketing about it in my social media, and I got super positive response from all the people. All the people wanted to help, and all the people wanted to cook with the tortillas. And I had a couple of chefs coming here. They were cooking at home, and the people start just ordering because they wanted to do what they were doing and they wanted to help. It's really going good. And I can tell you, I feel that after this is over, I think it's going to be even better.
So what kind of government assistance are you getting? There are many governments who are stepping up to assist small businesses to help them keep their heads above water. How has the government in the Netherlands stepped up to assist you?
Well, the first help they opened, it was that you could reduce the hours from your workers, because, of course, I think it was the main concern of all the restaurants, how are we going to pay all the businesses, how are we going to pay our people. So they opened that one, but they say that annually they get 8,000 requests, and in like 4 days they got like 70,000, so they close it up. Like right away, like 2 days later, it was closed up, and they were trying to find another solution for us. And right now they have a lot for different type of businesses. For me, for example, they are offering to pay 80% of the salaries for my workers for the time needed, but they are calculating 3 months. And for myself as an entrepreneur, because of course I live from my business and I also have to pay my bills, they are also giving, yeah, like financial help. They opened the locket the 6th of April. We could apply for this help. So it took like a month for them to set up everything, all the systems and all the people also that's going to manage it. And I have applied for it, but it takes also a couple of weeks for them to react and to actually, yeah, see how much money you are entitled to get. So I've applied, but I still don't have anything. But they do have help for, especially for the restaurants, for that industry, hotels and restaurants, which are the ones that were hit the hardest. But they also have for freelancers, for example, and for all other entrepreneurs like me. I'm not a restaurant, but I work directly with the food industry.
Well, I know people are probably wondering, where does she ship her corn tortillas, and does she ship to the United States? So what's the range of how far you ship your product?
That would be so cool. I don't have the whole market yet, and I do have a lot of, well, not a few potential customers, for example, in Scandinavia, I need the organic certification. I don't have that yet for this specific client, for example. But we've sent tortillas to South Korea, for example, 2 kilos or something. I have a friend in Australia, and she said I have to send her tortillas. It would be really nice. I could just send tortillas to all over the world.
Those tortillas go badly quickly, right?
Yeah, that's the problem. Also, that was my issue when I wanted to go to consumer market, because for restaurants, we bring the tortillas ourselves. But for the consumers, I may have to add a little cool bag. In the summer, it doesn't go so super. But in the winter, which is always here in the Netherlands, like 10 months of winter, it goes good with the sending. I don't use any conservatives or additives in the tortillas, which makes it really delicate. Right now, you can keep them for 20 days in the fridge, which is already a lot of time for tortillas. But yeah, the shipping, it will be a problem. They will get, and if it's really warm, they will get moldy easy.
Carla Plancarte Solorzano is the owner of the Tortilleria Tayari in the Netherlands. She's the only Mexican tortillera in the country, providing traditional organic corn tortillas to restaurants and consumers. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Brie Kirkham. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Ben Henry's our podcast producer. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.